Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the war room. We got Dez, Kim, Jimmy, PJ, B. Austin, the Hot Block Commander.
How you wanna end up 1 or 2 hour show to keep the brain running with the premise of talk sports on a national level? Bold with the topic, sort of like some rubbers. When it's game time, they like the Fab Five during prime time. Sports conglomerates speak their minds a little bit. For sports medicine, sports veterans and greats. The 4 for 26, so the war in Kuwait. It's the war room with five knights at the round table. Five Philly guys, diversified and educated.
What up, sports fans and pretty ladies? You are once again live in the War Room, brought to you by War Room Sports. I'm Devin McMillan, and I'm joined by my co-host Jimmy, B. Austin, and Akil. The big fight was uneventful, but there's some good NFL storylines this week. And, of course, we had another tragedy involving guns in our country, and we're going to talk about all of that. So join us right now in the JW Philly Realty chat room at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom, or join us on Facebook or Twitter at War Room Sports to get into the conversations. You can also call us directly when we open up the Digital Extreme Tech Hotline at 323-410-0012. If you're a fan of our show, then you got to check out some of our partners. So for the very, 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 very best in sports talk, make sure you tune in to Roy and Chris on the Broad Street Line every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, and check the listings on Blog Talk Radio for Brandon and Daniel on Sports Trap Radio, because those guys go whenever they feel like it. But like I said, both shows are right here on Blog Talk Radio. But don't worry, if you can't catch them live, you can hear and watch these guys and all of our other partner podcasts and webcasts at warroomsports.blogspot.com. In addition, don't forget to catch us in syndication 3 times on Fridays on newvibradio.com at 7 a.m., 1 p.m., and 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and on Sundays and Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time on fatsradio.com. You fellas ready to talk sports?
Man, you already know, man.
I'm always doing
football season, man. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, shout out to DMX, yeah, man. Earl, get better, yo.
Yeah, because Earl having some problems right now, man.
All he wanted to do, young ladies, was show you that he, you know.
He's trying to show off his beefcake. Stevie.
Where's your bread, Earl?
Earl, yeah, he probably out of bread. I smoked the bread, mama. Bread.
Yo, Stevie J got more bread than DMX.
Yo, man.
Stevie carry all his money in ones, though. Throw it on dude.
That's unfortunate. It's unfortunate, man. Earl had two amazing albums, man. You know.
Yeah, he wouldn't stop barking.
Two and a half.
Stop barking, people wouldn't have got tired of you. Can't keep barking, man. You're not really a dog on me.
If y'all haven't heard his latest album that he dropped, it's really a mixtape. Don't.
You're saying don't as if they were like running out to go check for that.
Yeah, like yo, I gotta go download that DMX. Like, no, those days are over, yo. But he had his run.
I don't think you really had to tell him that. But
he
had his run, man.
I was telling y'all that.
Let's see what happened this week while everybody was on that grind. It was a crazy week in and out of sports, but we're going to talk about what happened this week while y'all were on the grind. Of course, while y'all were on the grind, it's brought to you by DirecTV. If you like a better TV experience than cable has to offer, including that NFL Sunday ticket, go to our website, worldroomsports.com. Click on the DirecTV logo and order a better TV experience at a discounted War Room Sports sign-up rate. Man, even if you're only going to get it for a few months, these are the months to get it when the NFL season is in play. Just don't fall into signing the contract. Just get it when the season's over. Get rid of it. You know, come on, y'all know how to do that. But if you call yourself a sports fan, gotta have DirecTV. What you say, Jim?
I was about to say, before we even jump into anything, I just gotta let y'all two brothers know as Eagle fans that Casey Mack is already starting his trash talk in the in the chat room about the Chiefs and Eagles game and how Andy Reid, you know, so he's already starting, man. We, you know what I mean?
All right, yeah, we're gonna handle them tonight. All right, but Sad story, of course. Everybody's been following all week in Washington, D.C. You had somebody go crazy shooting at the naval yards, at the Navy Yards in D.C. 13 people dead, including the shooter. What did you guys think, like, when you heard this? Was it like a, uh-oh, here we go again type of situation?
Yeah.
Damn, another white guy went crazy?
To keep with our theme, man, the first thing I thought was, here we go again. But then it was like, it's just very sad and unfortunate when you look at people just basically going to work and not coming home, and, you know, for no reason.
Right.
I mean, our country is effed up, man.
Work isn't even a place a lot of people like to go, and then you go there and you got to deal with this. But B. Austin, that was your initial thoughts until you found out that he was black as well?
Exactly. Yeah, until I found then my second thought was my queen and beautiful wife works in D.C., so even though she was completely on the other side of town, I was a little nervous. So I
your queen and your wife
phone.
Work in D.C.?
Hmm?
Your queen and your wife work in D.C.?
Yeah, both of them. So I called both of them to see if they was all right. And, I was nervous.
Yeah, it's always one of them situations that you're talking about this, you're talking about 9/11, you're talking about the D.C. sniper, you know, things.
They had to cancel the Nats game or postponed it.
Yeah, and they did a doubleheader the next day after they were, you know, sure the dude acted alone. So our condolences go out to the families of everybody who was affected
absolutely
by that. We actually have a personal friend who just escaped with her life. We're not going to say any names on the air, but, you know, we're glad to still have her around because she came face-to-face with this guy, with this lunatic. You guys think that the gun law debates are going to spark back up? Because, you know, just like in our country, just like we talked about with the whole Trayvon thing and black people, it's the same thing with everything else. Like, it takes something like this for everybody to get back on their soapboxes about the gun control and the gun laws, and then, you know, a few weeks later everybody forgets about it, and then some other crazy shoots something up, and then we're right back at it. So do you guys think that that's about to get
not at all
come back to
not
the forefront?
Really, because listen, man, when they went into that school and killed all them white babies and nothing happened, at that point I just threw my hands in the air and said nothing will ever be done. I mean, because at the end of the day, the lobbyists are too strong, and the way our country is structured, no real change
prayer
will ever be made.
Where's your bread?
Where's your bread? You know what I'm saying? So the power is in the people, but at the end of the day, if the people are never united, the power really isn't in the people. So nothing will happen.
Gun laws have such a strong lobby that there's just too much money behind it, and they always tie it to their rights. Constitutional rights, which we all know that's kind of bogus. But, like Jimmy, I don't think anything will ever change.
I'm just kind of tired of hearing the little bogus argument that, well, you know, if you make the gun law stricter, people still going to get guns anyway. But, you know, that should be a bridge that you cross when you get there. For now, it just shouldn't be this easy to get guns. Like, every time something like this happens, it usually happens with legal weapons, you know, getting into the hands of people who have a history of mental illness. Like, how did that happen? Like, I don't understand it. But
let me tell you something, man. In the inner city, yo, it's easier to get a gun than a job.
True. Oh, yeah. Much easier. Much
so,
easier.
I'm going to leave you with that.
Where's your bread? You got
where's
the bread, you can get a gun.
Bread?
All right, so, you know, like we said, condolences to everybody affected by that situation. Let's get into some semi-sports stories. Still a little bit on the social side. The King has finally married his queen. LeBron got married over the weekend in San Diego. I know, especially, you know, a lot of people we talk to on social media every day, I know it's a lot of angry men out there because of this. He married his longtime girlfriend, Savannah Brinson, at the posh Grand Del Mar Hotel in San Diego. You know, people said it was a nice little private ceremony. I'm not sure how many of the dudes we talk to every day tried to break up in there and object when the minister asked for that. But what do you guys think? Do you think this will change LeBron's life? You know, sometimes when these athletes get married, you know, their career may take a turn.
It's
it could be a turn for the worse. It could be a turn for the better, you know, but it takes a turn.
A sad day for Richard Riders and idolaters everywhere.
Why do you think she's going to clean off his boxers? She's going to get all
the
dudes.
I wonder if some of the folks we know have now gotten out of his shorts. I don't think his wife is going to allow them to live in his underwear drawer permanently. I just don't. Congrats. Congratulations. You know, we're happy that you've embarked on that journey with a woman who has stuck by your side through the highs and the lows, through the receding of your hairline. Through you passing off jumpers, she stuck with you, stuck through the criticism.
Yeah, whatever. She stuck through them hundreds of millions of dollars too.
I was about to say the same thing.
Don't
she
cry
stuck
for her.
The contract.
I don't think it'll change. I don't think it'll change him. Nothing's really going to change. The account stays the same. The only thing now is if they get divorced, she can walk away with something. Where before,
dog, she
you know,
had,
she couldn't
she
really walk
two
away with anything.
She had
well,
two
before
yeah.
she was
going to
walk
go
away
mad
with that. Yeah, I was about to say, she was going to walk away with something. She had them true, babies.
Yeah.
She had them babies. All
she
about
had
them babies.
So he was done anyway. So my thing is this, though. When I was reading about the wedding, what
she
I found interesting is that
Maximus.
That Jay-Z and Beyonce were there, and they performed
Beyonce
at his wedding.
Beyonce sang, didn't they?
Yo, but they both performed. They performed Crazy in Love. And I'm like, why do I want to hear that at a number?
Kelly wasn't there.
You know these kids.
No, I'm just
these
saying
days.
That song. Like that song though. I wonder if Beyonce do the dance that goes number.
Jay-Z and Beyonce performed at my wedding though. I mean, you know, the DJ made them perform, but remember the reception was the Bonnie and Clyde, you know, but. Not like in the church or nothing like that. So I don't know where they probably performed in the church. So I don't know. I didn't really hear about it.
I mean, he does call himself. Never mind. I'm going to leave that alone. I'm going to chill.
Jay Hova. All right,
I'm
man.
I'm
going to
chill, yeah.
Sad story in sports, man. Former heavyweight champion Ken Norton Sr. dies at age 70. He said, you know, from some recent time, he's been like struggling with multiple seizures, and you know he finally passed away yesterday at the age of 70. For those that don't know, you know Ken Norton had a 3-fight series with Muhammad Ali. A lot of people don't hear about that. We always hear about the bigger marquee one with Ali and Joe Frazier, but he had the same type of 3-fight series with Ken Norton, and Ken Norton gave him just as many problems as Joe Frazier did. Jimmy, you were talking about it earlier. Like,
what
did you hear
about
that whole thing?
Ken Norton broke his jaw in their first fight, punched him right in his face and broke his jaw. And you know, he basically that was the second loss of Ali's career after the Frazier loss. Ali fought him two more times and won, but they both were controversial split decisions. So it wasn't like Ali just mopped the floor with this dude. This dude gave Ali that work. And he was a hard puncher. I mean, even though George Foreman, made him curl up like a little boy when he fought, because George Foreman was out there throwing buildings. But when you read about these guys.
George curled everybody up back then.
Foreman was curling cats up back in the day, because when you go and read about these fights from back in the day, it's amazing, like, just how talented the heavyweight division is and how putrid it is now. When you talk about a guy like George Foreman, Muhammad Ali, Joe Frazier, Ken Norton, I mean, you know, if not for Ali and his stature and what he did from on a social level, a lot of those guys would be looked at different because everybody now just thinks about Ali. But there were a lot of quality fighters back then.
One thing I have to say about Norton, I think he was one of the most underrated boxers. I mean, with a record of 42-7 and one loss, that's a testament. And his son, you know, Ken Norton Jr., won some championships with the Cowboys as a linebacker, and then went on with the 49ers. So you know, two times he won Father of the Year. In L.A., he won Father of the Year
strong.
In 1977.
Bloodline strong. You can tell Akil, like you said, some, you can tell when somebody's underrated because when they pass, that's when everybody who thinks they're great come out of the woodworks talking about how great they were. I'm like, why didn't you sing this song for him when he was alive? And you know, and people were overlooking him. And when
it's
everybody
crazy,
goes down that list of heavyweights,
think about it. Like Ali had, like his the shadow of Ali is just crazy. Like if not for Ali being there, imagine how guys would be revered. Guys like a Ken Norton. Or even a George Foreman or a Joe Frazier. I mean, George Foreman was 76-5, for Christ's sake. And you'd never hear his name mentioned, other than to talk about the grills he sold.
And was still beating people up in our era of boxing.
Exactly,
Joe, when he couldn't even move. He just hit hard enough to keep dudes off of him.
Yeah, he's out there throwing them buildings at people, man. I told you, when I talked to Joe Frazier before he passed, and boy told me he still wakes up feeling the pain from George Foreman punching him.
Yeah. So, I don't know if you guys remember the whole thing that went down with Chris Anderson, the Birdman, and the reason, kind of why he wasn't in the NBA anymore. He had a case where, you know, he was kind of being investigated for dealing with an underage girl on the internet and, you know, Denver, laughing at the Denver released him, you know, and he really couldn't get a job until Miami came calling. Last year, but he's been exonerated. Like the authorities in Colorado, like back then, raided his home as a part of the investigation. After like 15 months of investigation, he's been exonerated because they said he was the victim of like a major catfishing scheme. They're saying like the Manti Te'o situation on steroids, because there was actually a person in this. Like, the person on the other side was real, but there was somebody in the middle who was talking to this woman and acting as if she was Chris Anderson, and she was talking to Chris Anderson acting like she was this woman. So it got real crazy. It was real elaborate.
Yes.
We really don't have time to get into all the details, but I'm glad to see that the dude, you know, has been exonerated because for a minute, you know, that kind of stuff ruins your name. You know, you Google Chris Anderson and you see pedophile and all that kind of stuff, see him getting smeared like that. That kind of stuff ruins your name, and you don't even get a chance. You know, this is before you get a chance to fight and let people know that you didn't really do anything.
Yeah,
so, what do you guys think about?
Chuck will be saying when Aaron Hernandez gets exonerated.
Man, if he's found not to have done anything, I'm not even just saying found not guilty, because, you know, he got enough money to be found not guilty, but if somehow it comes, like the evidence comes back that he didn't do anything, it's going to be a lot of people who are going to owe that man an apology.
I mean,
hey, the only way
you supposed to be.
Hey, the only way you beat in the body is a technicality.
It's supposed to be.
Or if he
didn't
do it.
Like, you know. Anyway, man, at the end of the day, man, this is a crazy story. I heard briefly about it, but I didn't know all the details until he got exonerated. And then when you read the details, you say, man, that's crazy. Because you wondered why he just kind of disappeared. It wasn't his game that made him disappear. But he just, like, disappeared off the face of the earth and popped back up, you know, with the heat. And actually, it was very productive for him. So, you know, I'm glad that, you know, he's been exonerated. And you got to watch out there, man. People out here catfishing. Y'all got to be careful, man.
No doubt. Catfishing is real. Except for when it's Manti, he set that up himself. But some people really do get, you know, get caught up in the middle of that kind of stuff. I mean, this was like really elaborate, man. Like she's trying to play two people at the same time, and this is like a Canadian woman. So if you guys didn't hear about it, because I'm pretty sure we're not doing the details of this case any justice, just go look up Chris Anderson getting cleared. You know, Google that and then read the corresponding stories, because it was a crazy situation.
I'm glad he wasn't guilty of BBR, man. That's all I care about, man.
Yeah. I mean, it came to a point where he actually went out to meet this person. That's why the details got fuzzy to me, because he met the person. Like, she set them up, and they actually met. And the cops did say by the time he met her, she was of age. But, you know, they left those details unclear. I'm like, okay, if he met her, you know, how is he getting catfished like this if he actually went out and met the chick? I don't know, man. Somebody got to dig deeper into the story and let me know what really happened, but all I know is his name is cleared, and Chris Anderson is going to be back to help the Heat win a three-peat this season.
Yeah, more or less.
Happen.
Yep.
All right, so that's what happened, everybody, this week while y'all were on the grind.
Let's jump right into the birthdays. And the birthdays are brought to you by Alexandria Podiatry Associates and Dr. Monique Roll. For the best and comprehensive treatment of injuries to the foot, ankle, and lower extremities, visit Dr. Monique Roll of Alexandria Podiatry Associates. They're treating patients in the D.C., Maryland, and Virginia area and beyond. Go to alexandriapodiatry.org or call this, write this number down, 703-379-0700. And if you want the hookup, don't forget, tell them War Room Sports sent you. Gentlemen,
yay!
Got some nice birthdays for y'all real quick. Let's talk about one. Lance Armstrong turns 42.
I mean, fraud Uniball? Fraud Uniball.
I'll let y'all say it. Live strong, good brother.
I'm still rocking a Livestrong bracelet right now. I ain't go out on the dude. I'm still trying to live strong, so that never changes.
Yeah, Tony Kukoc turns 45.
Damn, Tony.
That's Kills boy, Tony Kukoc. Ryan Sandberg, 54.
the interim manager of our Philadelphia Phillies.
Yeah, the great second baseman for the Chicago Cubs. And now we have a Azuma Nelson, 55. So shout out to everybody on their birthday. I know that Casey Mack will hit us up in the chat room if there's anybody prominent having a birthday we didn't get to. But other than that, man, happy birthday to everybody. Let's tell people how to get in touch with us before we move on to some more topics.
No doubt. Everybody, make sure you check out our website at warroomsports.com. Click on the Contact Us tab to send a message to us about our company, our show, or to inquire about sponsorship and advertising opportunities. For general inquiries, email us at info@warroomsports.com. While you're browsing the site, click the memorabilia tab to buy War Room Sports merchandise. Click the blog tab to read our latest sports articles. In the All's Fair and Sports and More blog, then click the respective icons to like our Facebook page. Follow us on Twitter, subscribe to our iTunes podcast, download our free War Room Sports mobile app, and to watch our videos at warroomsportstv.com. You can join the JW Philly Realty chat room right now during the show at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom. To enter the chat room, just sign up for a free profile on Blog Talk Radio. If you don't want to create an account, just sign in through your Facebook or Twitter accounts. And while you're at it, click follow to get updates and reminders about the show. We'll be taking questions and reading posts from Facebook, Twitter, and the chat room during the show. To call in and speak with us, dial the Digital Extreme Tech Hotline at 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk. Jim, we should be expecting a call from Lamont in a minute because actually the HOF or FOH that we're about to do was his idea. So I told him that, you know, if he called in at a certain time, we'll grab him and let him talk about it.
Okay.
I don't see him in the – I don't see him on the switchboard right now.
Call
I
in,
ain't
King.
Grabbing nobody.
Let's get the chop in this table.
All right, so, yeah, check that one out, Jen. It might be him right there. So, All right, everybody, you know, this is a favorite segment of ours that we used to do a lot. We haven't really done it on the show that much recently, but we know it's also a favorite of a lot of people that follow the show and follow what we're doing online because we talk about it a lot on our Facebook page. The segment is called HOF or FOH. Now, HOF or FOH is a segment where we take a player from any sport and we debate whether or not we think they can get into the War Room Sports HOF Hall of Fame or if they should FOH. Use your imagination to figure out what FOH means. What's going on, bro?
That include yam farming? Could you get to the Hall of Fame as a yam farmer? I'm sorry.
I've already been inducted, so obviously.
Pick some of the best yam farmers you know. We'll debate them, too.
Y'all out of order.
All right, so this week, hold up, we gotta do our segment intro. Alright, so like we said, this idea was Mont's idea, so we're gonna debate the player that he has. So everybody, make sure you got your Google up so you can look up what you need to look up, because this is a sport where numbers count. We're going to the baseball diamond today, and our
Steve
subject
Joe.
For HOF or FOH is Philadelphia's own Jimmy J-Roll Rollins.
I hate this one.
You said I hate this one. Don't worry about it, because since it was Lamont's idea, we're going to put him on the spot first.
Yeah,
you give
I
us your case of why he should. give us a case of why he should.
I'll let y'all be the experts and talk about it.
All right, well, give us your idea, and then,
I'll figure it out, because I'm a Jimmy Rollins, an admitted Jimmy Rollins apologist and fan. I think he gets a bad rap. I also don't think he should have ever been batting first in our lineup, but that's a whole different story. And I'm looking at his career as it's coming to an end, and I was looking at his numbers, and I looked at, one of my baseball idols growing up, one of his numbers, Mr. Ozzie Smith of the St. Louis Cardinals, and I'm looking at Jimmy's number and I'm looking at Ozzie's numbers, and I'm like, they're pretty comparable. I mean, outside of the Golden Glove awards that Ozzie racked up, I think he has about 13 gold gloves to Jimmy's five. Their numbers are very similar, and Jimmy is actually leading Ozzie in some categories. He's slightly better in batting average. He's a little bit less in hits, runs batted in. I think Jimmy has the edge. Jimmy's also the seventh member of the 20-20-20 club, and I believe the 11th member of the 30-30 club. And Ozzie's not on either one of those lists. So that was why my question is Jimmy a Hall of Famer or is he a FOE?
Yo,
right, well,
what
is Jimmy, a three-time All-Star?
Three-time All-Star.
Three-time All-Star. One-time league MVP.
Seven MVP.
Yep.
He's been in the MVP voting a few times. I'd say one, two, three, four, maybe five times he was in at least the top 30 MVP voting. I mean, that sounds like a lot, but it's a lot of players in the National League, so that's pretty good.
He's led the National League in triples four times. He's led the National League in stolen bases and runs. So, I mean, he's got numbers. He's got credentials.
He was the third leading vote-getter for Rookie of the Year when he came up. He has had a pretty good 14-year career. Jimmy, what do you think?
It's difficult, man, because I've thought about this outside of my question. And I go back and forth.
Let me go, because it's easy for me.
Don't miss it, but it's like Ozzie Smith could flip, though, and he was very personable. So, yo, B. Austin, you answer this while I think about this, man, because go ahead, man.
Well, look, Jimmy has 2,165 hits. What Lamont said might have been true. Like, Jimmy Rollins probably should have never got pigeonholed into that leadoff role. Because, that might be a little bit misuse by the Philadelphia Phillies, over all of these years. But, B. Austin, go ahead. What you about to say?
Definitely should not have been a leadoff hitter. I'm going to say Hall of Fame. So that was
you going to give him HOF?
Yeah, HOF.
I don't want to be a homer about this whole thing, but.
You going to ask
Rollins.
Me my reason why?
Oh, go ahead. Give us your reason. Reason!
Because he plays for the Philadelphia Phillies, and admittedly, if you listen to this show, I don't know a goddamn thing about baseball.
So he just cheapened his Hall of Fame induction from you.
But,
out of any sport, baseball is the sport where numbers count the most. Like
he had
Lamont
five
gave us,
he
gave us some of
his. He could have been a MVP. I believe that. Legitimately.
See, I don't believe that. I don't believe that at all. Like, to me, it was kind of surprising that he got the MVP that he did get.
I agree with that.
Not taking anything away from that season, but, you know, it was still kind of surprising to me that he.
I'll go.
Yeah, I was
Golden
Glove, surprised
Silver
that.
Slugger Award, 2007, 2020 clubs, 30-30 club, 2007. Like, who was a better shortstop than him? And who was a better player than him in 2007?
All right, so he had one really, good year. I was saying he had a good year 07, one MVP, but he's only had four Gold Gloves and three All-Star appearances in 14 years. He was a solid player, and he had some, like you said, he had some All-Star years, some MVP years, but overall Hall of Famer. Like, I think he'll get in, but I don't think he's a Hall of Famer. And because when you look at people, I wouldn't put him in. Like, his contemporaries, these are 10 of his contemporaries. Jay Bell, Ray Durham, Barry Larkin, who got in, Orlando Cabrera, Alan Trammell, Edgar Renteria, Al Dark, Dick Bartel, Michael Young, and Rafael Furcal. And only so far, one of them looks like, well, one of them is in, and the rest of them are just kind of on the fence like him. And a couple are still playing. So I say he'll be on one of those on-the-fence guys that will get in, but I wouldn't put him in.
Okay. It's a little different from what Bjarnason was saying. He was saying, like, his homerness would take him into, you know, putting him in the Hall of Fame. I think my homerness might make me lean a little bit toward FOH because I've sat and watched Jimmy Rollins plenty of times.
And watch him pop up.
You know, watch him pop
spot.
Up like Willie Mays Hayes from Major League and frustrate the hell out of me. I do acknowledge that he's a great player, but I think I'm gonna lean more to the FOH side too. Sorry, Jimmy.
Yeah. Here's how I look at it, man. His numbers, they look good against people who are already inducted. But when you go against like his contemporaries, his peers, guys that have played in this generation, man, that's why it's very difficult for me. He's on the borderline. But I definitely, honestly, I would say FOH, and here's why. The Jimmy Williams criteria of the Hall of Fame, were you the best at your position, and were you the best in the league during your time? When the story of baseball is told, do I have to use Jimmy Rollins' name to tell the story of baseball? So with that being said, some of the guys that are in the Hall of Fame, I'd yank them out. So it's easy to say his numbers are better than this person, that person, but I don't think they should be in the Hall of Fame either. So let's just FOH to Jimmy Rollins. And let's flip Ozzy's dumbass out too while we're at it.
Oh no.
Damn.
You're out of pocket. You can't say Ozzy.
Damn. You said Ozzy, your flips Ozzy have no role here. Yo, man. I'm just kidding.
No, truthfully, and I'm not cheap, and I do value defense, but, you know, if there was any type of case for what Jimmy just said, like if it wasn't for defense, Ozzie Smith wouldn't be, you know, remembered the way
but
he's remembered.
But as a shortstop, that's what you get known for anyway.
But
you get
you're right.
Traditionally, shortstops aren't not great hitters.
They're usually the best defenders on the team.
You're right. But I think that's changed too over the over the steroid era.
It's changed because we've had about three or four shortstops in the last decade. 15 years that are offensive juggernauts, but still over the history of baseball.
I mean, over the history of baseball,
you don't have 20 shortstops that were power hitters.
No, you got maybe a handful. You're correct over the history of baseball, but I said I think that it's changing. I mean, primarily probably due to steroids, but still.
So you can't base Jimmy based on the last 5 years. Then you gotta measure him up against the rest of baseball. And if you're doing that, he's a defensive shortstop who pops out a lot and should have never been in the number one hole and swings for the fences. But defensively, I don't know in his career, in the time that he's been in the majors, that there's been five shortstops that are exceptionally better than him. I mean, you throw Derek Jeter in there and you throw A-Rod in there. I mean, those two are freak of nature guys. But
I agree.
Other than that, Jimmy Rollins, you got to mention Jimmy.
Yeah, I mean, no, he gets a mention. I just don't put his ass in the hall. He gets mentioned, though. I mean, if nothing else,
I think he's a second or third ballot guy. I don't think he's a lock. I don't think he's a first ballot guy. I think he's a second or third ballot guy.
I mean, for me, I don't even, like, I can't even stand that whole ballot thing. Because if you're a Hall of Famer, you're a Hall of Famer. Like, I mean, I understand because they can't put everybody in the Hall of Fame in the same year. But the fact that that takes away from guys being in the Hall of Fame, that people even have to mention that. Like, even if it takes him 3 or 4 years to get in, if he gets in, he's a Hall of Famer. They shouldn't even say that before his name, third ballot Hall of Famer. But
he's a seventh ballot.
I mean, I'm
Hall
rooting
Hall
for him to get in. But you know, if I was voting, it would be difficult for me. It would be difficult
Lamar
for me
because
I think it's like
a
borderline
type thing. A pretty good point. Like, who is our benchmark in terms of shortstops? Is it Jeter? Is it Aroyd? Who's our benchmark? And then how does J-Roll pencil out against?
I mean, it has to be those guys,
it's got to be Ozzie Smith and Cal Ripken Jr. Those are your benchmarks.
Oh, you're talking about
all time,
those guys. But for Jimmy's era,
I'm not even get started.
A-Rod, they're basically erasing him from the game. Alex Rodriguez never actually happened.
A-Rod's plan is like Michael J. Fox in Back to the Future when he was disappearing from the picture.
Yeah.
Like, the more he disappears.
You take A-Rod out the picture, that might be a little bit more favorable for Jimmy Rollins in the end.
Man.
So,
the best shortstop to play was Honus Wagner, man.
Do y'all think the steroid era will help A-Rod? I mean, help J-Roll? You think the steroid era will help him since he's assumed to be clean?
Yeah. I think... The people I view as borderline, maybe people don't view J-Roll as borderline. I mean, but that's why we have these HOF or FOH, because these are people we kind of view as borderline. I think in baseball, a lot of those guys are going to get in just because of, like what Akil said, you know, the steroid era is going to help guys that you may have been kind of, you know, thinking about before. It's going to push those guys right in. So I think he will get in. But as far as I'm going to go right now, I'm going to give him a slight FOH. Not a big disrespectful FOH, just a slight one.
So check this out.
What about
so
guys
you
like
guys
Omar
think...
Vizquel? What do you think about Omar Vizquel? And also, Ernie Banks plays shortstop too. So, I mean, Ernie Banks put up some power numbers, but...
Is Ernie Banks in?
I don't know, and I'm not in front of a laptop
I think
right
he's
now.
In. I think Ernie Banks is in. But check this out. Some of the writers may say, hey, ha ha, look, we put Raul Ibanez in. Ha ha to the steroid guy.
you want to impress me? You want to impress me? Put Steve Jelks in the Hall of Fame.
Yo, he said Raul Ibanez, though. Come on, man.
Yeah, but I think, to me, it's borderline, man. And, you know, I just, man.
Because
yeah. And I understand how numbers are important in baseball, right? But it's like when you're comparing his numbers in this era to numbers, you know, from the early 80s or guys that played before then, it completely, you know, it's like we have to adjust for inflation, man.
Well, right, I appreciate y'all posing the question out there, fellas. I really do. All
right. No, we're going to throw it out there on the page tomorrow because we're going to start a series, like a photo series of HOF, FOH. But we want to do them, you know, either here or on the video cast first before we put it out to the people tomorrow. So we'll see what the people say tomorrow. We have an overwhelming amount of Philly fans on our social media pages. So I have a feeling that J-Roll is going to. You know,
we got some Philly haters too, though. Don't get it twisted.
Be looked upon favorable. Yeah, we also have that. But all right, Mike, thanks for calling, man.
As a Philadelphian.
Huh?
I said Jimmy almost don't count as a Philadelphian at all. Like he don't root for no home teams at all.
Come on, man. It's like everybody actually root for the Philly fan.
I'm a Phillies fan. I'm just trying to keep it real, though, man. I didn't want to put him in based on that.
I hear you. Only Jimmy's only loyalty to Philly is back page.
Yo!
All right, Mike. I get that. Thanks for calling in, man.
All right, Mike.
No problem.
All right,
by the way, we got some comments in our chat room, too. He said right. Rollins, this is Casey Mack, of course, and you know he's a baseball fanatic.
He's a baseball writer,
What did he say?
Yeah.
Oh, who said
Rollins
that?
Rollins gets in when Frank White goes in. You know,
Frank.
Frank White?
Yeah.
Frank White, you mean Frank Thomas?
I guess he's talking about Chris
that's
Rollins.
That's what I was thinking about.
Frank White.
He said also Fred McGriff didn't get in.
Crime
so that's another name. Yeah, he said A-Rod, Jeter, Tulo, and Garcia Parr. Don't forget Garcia Parr. His name wasn't brought up at all.
I'm not a baseball head, but I'm not a baseball head, but is Fred McGriff supposed to get in?
The Crime Dog?
The Crime Dog, yeah.
He's borderline. Yeah, he has numbers. Look at his numbers.
But no,
there.
Kill. KD is talking about Frank White, second baseman from the Royals. And you know KC is from KC. That's why his name is KC.
Yeah.
So that might be his homer pick.
Oh, that's
pick
his,
right
that's
there.
His homer pick. But he did.
Because I thought he was trying to give a shout out to Biggie.
Because
yeah,
Frank
I
White,
say rest
he had a career batting average of .255, 160 home runs, 886 runs batted in, eight-time Gold Glove Award. No, eight-time Gold Glove Award though, five-time All Star.
Oh.
And a Silver Slugger Award.
That's
and
more than Jimmy.
ALCS MVP in 1980. Not a league MVP, but he won the championship series MVP in 1980. So,
that's more.
That he makes a good point. If you're going to consider Jimmy Rollins, then you might have to consider somebody like Frank White.
And he has more All Stars and Gold Gloves than Jimmy Rollins. He just doesn't have as
since
many.
Since I said FOH to Jimmy. FOH to Frank White, too, KC. Nah.
FOH, Frank White.
All right, man. We'll get into some hot topics before Fred Perdue from Heavy in the Games calls in to give us his college games of the week. Hot topics, of course, are brought to you by Audible. If your schedule is too hectic to read as much as you want, then you need to try audiobooks. Kick back. Let somebody else do the reading for you. So we do. We lazy. All you got to do is visit Audible and sign up for your free trial at audibletrial.com/warroomsports. And in no time, you can be listening to the latest bestsellers or whatever else you read. Some of y'all don't read bestsellers. It might be like smut books, hands-free, stress-free, while getting other things done at the very same time. Let's talk a little bit about Floyd Mayweather and the fact that he keeps making people that get hyped up as great fighters look like not-so-great fighters. There was a big build-up to this Floyd-Canelo fight. When anybody gets a lot of time to overthink and analyze things, they find ways to say that the person who should win might not win. I mean, it was the same thing back in, 04, 05 when the Eagles went to the Super Bowl. You know, the Patriots were supposed to crush them, but they had that week off, and by the time... 2 days before the game came, everybody that flip-flopped said the Eagles were going to win. Over-analyzation, everybody. Floyd went out, basically dominated this fight. To me, it wasn't really competitive. It was just a lot of frustration on Canelo's part trying to land punches that he couldn't land. I do agree, he's a hard enough puncher to where if he caught Floyd, he could have caused some damage. But you can't hit what you can't catch, and he couldn't catch him all night. What did you guys think about this fight?
It's very difficult being a Floyd detractor because, to be honest, man, it's not fair that a coward gets that much talent, man. Like, I can't front on his ability in the – like, that's the best I've seen Floyd look in about five years, about a half decade, because from what I counted with my own eyes, and we saw the fight together, Devin, I never saw Floyd get hit more than three times. He got hit three times in 12 rounds.
He said more than three. I didn't see him get hit flush at all.
Yeah.
Because, because that was the big thing. Like, Canelo
his
has
shoulder,
power
his, now his shoulder
to
might
do some
hurt.
Damage. Yeah, his shoulders, his arms. Maybe his abdomen, all that stuff. He went home sore, but he was still in good enough shape to go down the towel and party with the Asian chicks in the bathtub naked. But I really didn't see him get hit flush. And it's not like you do in a lot of fights, because when you say that, what everybody brings up is the one punch that Shane landed in the second round of their fight but couldn't finish him off. Like, you really don't see him get hit that flush too often. And, you know, like they say, the hard work and dedication pays off, because I can see the frustration in Canelo. And after the fight, you know, he didn't have any excuse or anything. He just said, I couldn't hit him. and they kept asking him questions, and he kept saying, I just couldn't hit him. So, you know. You think you're going to go in there and beat Floyd? It's not like he's this big, imposing dude. It's not like he was Mike Tyson in the 80s just running through people, knocking people out. But you get in the ring and he embarrasses you because you can't hit him. And when he decides to swing on you, you know, he's popping you flush dead in the middle of your face. So
bottom line is we witnessed a pugilist specialist. He basically gave a lesson to that young man. And it was very impressive. When they started showing, like, highlights in slow motion, I thought I was watching The Matrix. You can't hit the guy. It's just amazing. I mean, it's like poetry, yo. Like, it's just amazing. I don't know what else to say.
Even amongst all this, we still have some controversy, Jimmy. The judge, C.J. Ross, a woman, same woman who was one of the two judges who gave Bradley the fight over Pacquiao, she scored the fight a draw. Somebody even wrote an article trying to justify what she may have seen. And what they were saying, I get. But in the case of this fight, I don't get it, because there weren't even enough, quote-unquote, close rounds that could go either way for you to give Canelo to make this fight a draw. And she ended up, after all the criticism, because, you know, people were talking about this fight and the Pacquiao-Bradley fight, she actually ended up stepping down. They're saying she's stepping down indefinitely, so you never know what that means. But what did you guys think about that? Is there any way possible that any of you could have gotten a draw out of this fight?
I think she probably was on the take in terms of a lot of money transferring. Hopefully she wasn't, but that's the initial speculation. That her and somebody else could have made a lot in the betting world with that. What's interesting
is
I called the fight.
But do you do that more than once, though, Kill? Or should we just chalk it up to she might see fights differently than the other judges? Like,
I don't want to
call her a cheater. She might just see fights differently.
She does not like Floyd, and she does not like Floyd's antics. She does not like him being a woman abuser. And she struck.
She gave Floyd a draw.
She doesn't like steroid
users.
I don't know.
But
I'm a Floyd hater, and there's no way that you could score that bout with more than a 5-point differential to Floyd. Like, he won every round.
Here's the thing. The ESPN boxing analyst, straight up after the fight, said she must have been bought off by somebody in Vegas. They straight caught her cheat on TV. Like, I'm like, damn, it was going in.
No, Carol's definitely right. That was the initial speculation. I'm just saying, you know, I'm not ready to just throw her out there like that. But I mean, but you have to think about it. It does cross your mind.
When I saw her score, man, the first thing I thought of was this.
All right, well, look, we got one more thing about Floyd that I want to get some opinions from you brothers before we go to college football with Fred Perdue. They asked Bernard Hopkins about a possible fight with Floyd. His answer got a lot of traction just because it's him talking and it's involved with Floyd. I don't see this ever happening, because Bernard said if it happened, it would have to happen at 160, so Floyd would have to come up to 160. Bernard, at his old age, 48 years old, going on 49 in January, would have to come down to 160. I don't see it happening, but Bernard was saying, and I think a lot of people feel this sentiment, not that they agree that Bernard would have a chance, but a lot of people think that there's just nobody out there for Floyd. You know what I'm saying? They're throwing around now Danny Garcia, Adrian Broner. Those are young guys who really might not be ready for that big of a fight. They need to be fighting each other, in my opinion, you know, before anybody tries to look at Floyd. And at the same time, Broner will probably never fight Floyd. Well, he does like money.
Broner would rather shine Floyd's shoes than fight
him.
But you show him.
Yeah, you show him that bread, though. It might be a different situation. But Bernard was saying, you know, Floyd's a chess player, and to beat a chess player, you need another chess player. And he was like, you know, who's the biggest chess player in boxing besides Floyd? You know, it would be him. But do you guys want to see a 49-year-old against a 30, you know, 37, 38-year-old? However old Floyd would be if this fight ever got made. Do you guys want to see damn near a 40-year-old and a 50-year-old go at it?
The fight would be boring as hell, but I definitely would love to see it. If nothing at all, just for the all access, which would be pure comedy, yo.
Yo, I am the biggest Bernard Hopkins fan out there. Please leave the sport. You've done all you can do. Everyone recognizes you as a great. Stop it. Stop. Please.
I wouldn't mind seeing the fight. I wouldn't mind seeing it only because what else is there out there? Imagine the money.
I'm encouraging this dude, yo.
And I think B-Hop will have a chance to win. I mean, it's not like Florida knock him out, so Florida has to get him on points. But, you know, Bernard just had to catch him one time.
It would be similar style, two defensive fighters, so it'll probably be like 16 punches thrown in the whole fight.
It'll
they might just have to wrestle.
But the all access, all right, though, with Floyd just basically joning on Bernard, that would be comedy, yo. Naeem is actually on. Naeem, let's talk about the fight real quick
before we jump to college football. All right, before we get to college football, because we know, Fred, we know you got you waiting out there. Give us one more second. We're going to take this call on the Digital Extreme Tech Hotline from the brother Naeem. Naeem, what's going on? I know you want to talk about this Floyd fight.
What's going on? But I'm laughing so hard because that would be the boredest fight of life to be for Floyd. They won it, but not. I'm sorry, B. Austin. I lost respect for him a long time ago. He should have been retired. We disagree on this one. He claims North Philly. He's really from Germantown. He grew up on Weaver Street. He grew up on West Weaver. He claims Northeast from uptown, Germantown, Brickyard. Stop it. So, getting to the topic on hand here, I think what we saw on Saturday was just pure greatness. I mean, I really wanted to see Canelli, like, try to catch Floyd, but he couldn't catch him. It was sad, man. I felt bad for the boy Canelli. So I like him as a fighter. I like this kid.
Yeah, face getting all red.
He looked like Blake Griffin after the Grizzly series.
after Z-Bo got at him.
Might have pushed this fight. I think with these young fighters, they're not experienced with a fighter person like Floyd. Like, I think Floyd's last best challenge, I would hate to say, was like Sugar Shane Mosley. You know what I mean? Like, Sugar Shane rocked him. But listen,
they have to take him though, Naeem, because Floyd won't be around for much longer.
And if you can get lucky
and beat Floyd, that's a career maker for these young bucks.
That's a career maker,
I mean,
but that's a career.
But you have to take
the
fight.
You lose.
Even,
but you're going to hurt
these
young boys' career.
I don't think Canelo, somebody like him, losing to Floyd, I don't think that damages his career.
That doesn't damage
a lot of great fighters lose, you know, in their career. And if you lose,
I'm talking about ego, pride.
If your one loss comes to somebody, and I feel you, but if your loss comes to somebody who in some years they're going to consider the best of this era, you know, and he can bounce back from this fight and still dominate everybody else, I think he'll be fine. But, I mean, there's not too many Floyds out there. So really, you know, unless you're fighting Floyd, I don't think it should damage his ego.
It's not. I mean, Floyd just proved to me, I like Floyd, but he just proved to me this Saturday, like, really, he's going to probably, if he wins all these rest of these fights for Showtime, he will go down as the greatest sports figure ever. Like he said a couple years ago.
Man.
He never took a loss. You didn't say boxer. You said sports figure, though.
You said sports figure ever.
You name one person in their career that has not took a loss. Mike took a loss. Magic took a loss. This kid is professionally fighting. He's not took a loss.
That's a team game. And if you're looking at finals that Mike made it to, he's never taken a loss. Even though it's a team game, I don't even like to reference that. But he's not going to be the greatest sports figure of all time.
Sports figure is saying that. Something huge, man. First off, I'm taking Ric Flair over everybody.
Ooh, okay.
I mean, there's nobody in this world that's going to be looking at Floyd over Michael Jordan, over Muhammad Ali, you know, over people
not,
like that.
Not,
he's
not,
not going to get
he's
those
not even
going to
be the best boxer, but he's not even going to be the best boxer ever. Even if
I mean, it's arguable, though. I get what he's saying. It's arguable. In terms of boxing,
he'll get in the conversation.
He's in that conversation. It's arguable. But I was just saying when he said sports figure, because now you're bringing in all kinds of people. You're bringing in Wilt Chamberlains and Jackie Robinsons and Michael Jordans and Magic Johnsons and Bill Russells.
I can't think of that one guy name that you brought from Great Britain. From that Great Britain, when he did a punch, before he did a punch and knocked him out. That was a punch that was done from like 1960. You haven't seen it done so long. I mean, he's done a lot of stuff. I can't think of dude's name.
Floyd is a specialist, man. Ricky Hatton.
I mean, when I saw that, I was like, yo, this kid is something nice.
He's definitely special. He's definitely talented. And I didn't disagree with anything you said, but when you said the greatest sports figure, that's why I'm like, damn, you include a lot of people in that.
Jackie Robinson, you took it out of here, boy. Floyd owe you a check, man. He owe you a check.
No, but seriously, to get that title,
a lot of stuff, and this is the first time we don't see eye to eye with all. But you just a Floyd hater. You don't like Floyd.
He admits he's a hater.
The sports figure thing, you know how it goes in sports. Because Jimmy just did a video about the Mount Rushmore of black athletes.
I saw that.
If you don't do anything outside of the game to transcend your sport, then you're never going to be looked at as that. Even if he helps young mothers get college education so they can dance.
Well, he doesn't know any better. Look, Floyd don't know that. I mean, come on, look. He's not the sharpest knife in the drawer. We know that, you know. But as when it comes down to his profession of boxing, you can't take
sharp.
Hands down.
I agree with you, but when you say sports, I'm thinking about like Jesse Owens. I'm thinking about like guys, you know, Olympic athletes. Like when you say the greatest sports figure, that just triggers.
I should say one of the greatest sports figures. Because he's never took a loss.
Of our generation, absolutely. And in boxing, of our generation, I mean, you know, he's probably the best.
You think the competition that Floyd has faced over the last 20 years has been particularly stiff? No,
man, you can say that about Michael Jordan. Who did Mike Tyson fight?
Exactly. It's not his fault.
I'm not claiming Mike Tyson is the greatest boxer ever.
I'm just saying, in my opinion, I don't think he's better than Roy Jones.
If Roy Jones would have stayed at his weight class,
he went from middleweight to heavyweight. He's right. If Roy Jones, before he got knocked out in his prime, I think I would love to see him and Floyd go at it. That would be a very good fight.
We talk about people criticize Floyd for the roster of people he's fought. You know, Floyd actually has fought everybody out there. Some of them he may have waited a little until they were past their prime.
He waited too long for sure.
But Roy Jones, come on, seriously. He fought at least three dudes.
Yo, I hate when y'all bring his name up.
Roy had to gain weight to fight people,
though.
He beat Bernard. He beat Tony. He beat all the contenders. He beat all the number one contenders.
Yo, he's not even good. Yo, he fights with Shelham Long now, yo.
Not now.
All right, but look, man, we got to.
He fights with people's servants.
Hey, thanks for your call, though, man. We got our college.
It'll be a good fight. Go ahead, man. Y'all have a good one.
We'll get back to you.
I'm with you on that.
It's my team, man.
We're looking up.
All right, now take it easy. Y'all gotta stop bringing Roy Jones' name up, though.
No, that ain't me, yo. Yo, Kill. I can't ride with you.
Yo, y'all be disrespecting homie, man. Homie was nice.
Yo, he's a bum, Kill. Yo, I mean, even if you want to say that, Floyd is for it. Oscar, Floyd is for it. Shane, Floyd is for it. Zab Judah. Floyd,
all those
yo.
Guys, but listen, all those guys were too light. There was nobody in Roy's class for him to fight. So he had to gain like 20 pounds to fight people.
But he's still fighting. He's still losing. He's fighting Maul. He's fighting civil servants. Roy is
now
not good,
count.
Yo.
Yeah, now it doesn't count.
Why don't it count?
Because he's
count
like
on that record.
I saw Roy. I've seen Roy get stretched before. I've never seen none of the guys. No,
seen him get stretched like three times. But then we got my friend waiting on the line.
He
man.
Gained too much weight. My thing is he gained too much weight. He should have stayed in his weight class.
Cockiness will do that to you, man.
Hey, look, we got Fred waiting on. Be awesome. We got Fred waiting on the line. So real quick, you know, I just wanted to, you know, everybody know the MLB final stretch is going on. We got the wild card races in effect. We don't even have time to talk about the standings because my man been waiting on us for a long time to give his college games of the week. Jimmy, you want to bring on Fred so we can see what's going on in college football this week?
Absolutely. Let's bring on Fred. Shout out to Antonio Tarver, who owns Roy Jones. But anyway, man.
You mean Mason the Lion Dixon?
Mason the Lion Dixon.
Let's talk some college football. We had an exciting week in college football. You know, all highlighted with that A&M and Alabama game. And we have our college football analyst on the line. Nobody knows more about college football than this guy from Heavy in the Game Sports. Let's welcome Fred Perdue in the war room. Fred.
What up, Fred?
What's going on,
Fred?
Fred, you know, we start arguing boxing, man. We get carried away, man.
Can I say something before we jump into this college football?
Oh, Fred.
Okay.
One, money team all day. Two, Roy Jones Jr. is from my state of Florida, the Sunshine State. Seriously, Roy Jones? Seriously?
Hey, I give Kill this, man. At least he's consistent. Nobody changed his mind about that. Like, so we're going to have this argument like five more times this month.
My mind got changed.
Yo, Kill, here's what I want you to do, Kill. Before we move on to college football,
I ain't a part of nobody's team. So fuck the money.
Yo, just Google Roy Jones Jr. and look at the first picture that pops up on the side of Google. That's all I want you to do. Anyway,
sleep.
With that being said, Fred, man, we had an exciting week. It was some good games, man. Of course, we got to jump right into the big game and get your opinion about Johnny Football and how he played against Alabama and how Alabama won the game. Yeah.
Well,
so what did you think about the game?
I was afraid for Alabama to start that game off. I've only seen this look in two guys' eyes: Peyton Manning when he won the Super Bowl the first time and only time, and Tom Brady when he won the Super Bowl against the Carolina Panthers. They had a look in their eye, and it's like, you can't stop me. I don't care what you do. I don't care what defense you run. I don't care. You can have Vince Lombardi as your head coach. It does not matter. I'm going to rip you apart. And that's what Johnny Manziel had in his eye. And it just – I think Nick Saban happens to be the best second half adjustment coach in the country. And had that been any other team, or actually had that been any other coach, Alabama would have been in trouble.
Yeah.
So no credit to McCarron and
A.J. McCarron, I think he's a good college quarterback, but I don't see him as a – when you want to transition him into as a pro quarterback, still not sold when you have a lot of talent around you. I'm not saying he's Ken Dorsey or anything, but I'm not saying he's going to be the next superstar quarterback in the NFL.
See, I feel that way about Johnny Football.
I do as well.
I don't think he's going to translate to the NFL.
I do not feel that he will either.
Yeah, but at the same time, B. Austin, because we've been having this conversation all week, and it's like you keep looking. Can y'all hear me? Because I keep hearing you.
Yeah, you got an echo, Dev.
All right, go ahead.
No, but what I was saying is in terms.
No.
in terms of that game, you're right. He makes adjustments unlike anybody else. And, I mean, I even watch the pro games and look to see what coaches make great adjustments, and it's amazing.
The one thing I did take away from that game is this is not the Alabama team from last year, not even close. Their offensive line has gotten better, but this defense has lacked a pass rush for the last 2 years. And they haven't really had one since Courtney Upshaw was there. And really and truly, I don't think they have anyone that can get that pass rush. Any team that runs an offense similar to what Texas A&M runs, that up-tempo, air raid, spread offense, where you're just chucking it around, they're going to do that. I remember, if you remember back a few years ago when Geno Smith and West Virginia were just really getting going, they went up against LSU, and they put up 400 yards on LSU, and you say to yourself, well, if I put up 400 yards, I'm supposed to win, right? Well, they got blown out by LSU. The offense put up a lot of big plays. And also, the days of Alabama having a no-fly zone in the secondary, ask Mike Evans how that worked out for them. Over 200 yards.
Mike Evans is killing it.
Mike Evans might be I think a couple NFL teams will be calling his name in a couple weeks, in about a year and a half.
Yeah, I haven't seen a Mike Evans perform that well since Good Time. But listen, though, you say teams that can spread it out and move the ball like that. Who do you see in a nation that can actually do that?
The one team that I've seen, and it really, really can't hit home a little bit, Tennessee isn't all that great. They still have SEC talent. Mm-hmm. This Oregon team looks really good. They dropped 59 points on Tennessee. It was a close one early. They held them down first quarter, and next thing you know, I turned away for a little bit, and next thing I know, ding, 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 points, 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 points. And it's like this team doesn't stop. They have one speed, extremely fast. You think the Eagles are fast now? This Oregon team is a little bit faster, just a little bit faster. And Marcus Mariota is a quarterback you really want to keep your eye on. He really does a lot of things like Colin Kaepernick does. He's not as big, but he has an arm, and he's a little bit faster than Colin Kaepernick. And I think with him, he's a developing quarterback. And it's funny because Marcus Mariota was the reason why Johnny Manziel isn't at Oregon right now. So we could be talking about a quarterback controversy right now between Marcus Mariota and Johnny Football at Oregon. But
okay.
we have Johnny Manziel now at Texas A&M, obviously, because he was, I guess, afraid of the competition. Who knows? These young quarterbacks, they don't like to sit behind anyone for too long.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about this moving forward. What games do you like this week?
Well, this Clemson-North Carolina State game tonight is going to be very interesting. In the ACC, these teams go in on Thursday, and these teams that are very highly ranked, expected to win, don't necessarily win. Ask Florida State how going into NC State last year worked out for them. They lost that game, and because they lost that game, it hurt them the rest of the year. They couldn't get past the number 10 overall ranking. This Clemson team is good. Don't get me wrong, but it really does scare me. Thursday night games in the ACC scare me just a little bit. Another game that I really like, and I think is going to be a battle of bad offenses with good defenses, is in the SEC. You have Florida going up against Tennessee. I was actually thinking about going to this game, but I thought otherwise. I'd rather save my money. Why go to see bad football? But Tennessee is going to possibly be considering changing quarterbacks, and Florida finally is licking their wounds after losing to my Miami Hurricanes. I have my thoughts on that game, but a win is a win, so I'll take it. But this Florida Gators team, I think they're going to get right. This is a get-right game for them. Tennessee isn't back yet, and I think up front, physically, they have the advantage on Florida, but Florida has a Will Muschamp advantage. And with that being said, I think Florida is going to run away with this game. And last but not least, I struggled between this one, but I ended up going with Stanford hosting Arizona State. Arizona State, if you did not catch the game against Wisconsin last week, oh, well, they screwed a Wisconsin team. The refs really did screw them. But if you didn't see that game, quarterback Joe Staube for Wisconsin took a knee. Refs didn't spot the ball, didn't stop the clock enough for them to go in and spike the ball, take a field goal. It's just a lot of craziness. But this Wisconsin team is very similar to this Stanford team. And this Stanford team, they have a quarterback who I've seen him since his freshman year. And I have to say, this guy reminds me a lot of Andrew Luck. He's not Andrew Luck 100%, but I say Andrew Luck light. His name's Kevin Hogan. He's a redshirt sophomore. More than likely, he may come back for one more year, but if he has a big year, maybe not.
Wow.
But he has every bit of all the tools. He has good arm, not a great arm, probably not Andrew Luck arm, but just a notch below. But he's a little quicker than Andrew Luck. He's a little faster than him. He's not as big, but he's a little faster. And he has complete control over this offense. And the one thing I also have to say about Arizona State, I didn't mention a guy last week with that Arizona State team, Will Sutton, defensive tackle. This guy, he is just a disruptor on the inside. He could have came out last year. He would have been a high first-round draft pick last year, decided to come back, and obviously, based on what I've seen this year, it was a good decision, came back. His draft stock is going up.
Gotcha. Fred, before we get you out of here, right, what's going on with your Patriots?
Scoreboard says 2-0, but this team is gonna have to get better at wide receiver. This offense is very complex, and Bill Belichick is not gonna have that much longer. I've been hearing some rumblings about a team obliterator. Team obliterator, as Chip Bayless said, calls him a TO sighting. I don't think that'll happen, but I wouldn't mind it. I know that sounds crazy. T.O. is a – let's get this out of the way before we go any farther. Terrell Owens is a Hall of Famer.
Yeah. I don't think that's
– I know he's in excellent shape. You know he's in excellent shape right now, too.
Yeah, T.O. is in excellent shape. I would take T.O. right now, and if it's just a one-year non-guaranteed contract, I'd take that any day of the week. At least
he might take that right now.
Yes, he would. Getting Gronkowski back, that'll help a little bit next week, not this week. But this Tampa Bay Bucs team can't get out of their own way, so I don't have to worry about too much, do I?
I don't know. I think that might be upset special right there. Upset special.
Wow. Upset special. I don't see that one, guys. They can't get out of their own way. They have more. They have more penalties than Josh Freeman has completed. That is bad.
Yeah.
That is very bad.
But think about it. Even with that said, they're 0-2, but they're like 10 seconds from being 2-0. So
yes,
if they can just be a little bit more disciplined, the defense is tough. So if they can be a little bit more disciplined, they might come up there and upset them in Foxborough. That's my upset special of the week for you.
And, Jimmy, I got to say, on the other side of the coin, your Denver Broncos, can I just say – can we have a stone cold lead pipe lock on that game Monday, please?
Well, the Raiders, absolutely. I hate the Raiders, but you know, this is football. Anything can happen, man. And who you got tonight, Eagles or Chiefs?
Oh, that's a tough one. I'm taking the Eagles, though. You just can't, when you're retiring a number, you have Andy Reid coming back. This offense going up against a team with Alex Smith. I don't really like what I've seen from Alex Smith all that much. He's still a game manager. And I don't think they have a defense enough to keep up with this offense that moves so fast. So give me the Eagles.
Okay.
Give me the Eagles 10. As a matter of fact, give me the Eagles.
Whoa!
By 10.
Okay. All right, Fred. Before we get you out of here, tell our listeners how they can see your work, get in touch with you on Twitter and all that. What's your Twitter handle and your website or whatever?
You guys can reach me at heavyinthegames.com. Everything in the world of college football, NFL, just football in general. Just come visit the site. Everything up there. We're kind of getting into the NFL draft stuff a little bit. We just brought on a new NFL draft guy to break down everybody you want to know about. We also You can reach me on Twitter at FProduceSports, or you can reach me on Twitter also at Heavy in the Games.
All right, Fred, man. We look forward to talking to you next week, man. Thanks for all the insight.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
Fred.
Take it easy.
Thanks, Fred. Peace.
No doubt, no doubt. All right, so anybody, y'all know the drill. Check out our website at worldroomsports.com to call in and speak with us about any of today's topics. Dial the Digital Extreme Tech Hotline. That's 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you already happen to be listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk, and we'll try to get to you. All right, now. It's about that time.
You already know it's football time, good brother.
And
this NFL kickoff wrap is brought to you by Stitcher Smart Radio, because it's almost time for the Eagles and Chiefs to kick off. So, listen, you can now hear our show, The War Room, on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your computer, your iPhone, your Android phone. If you happen to have a BlackBerry or Palm phone, kill yourself. But before you do, check out The War Room. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed and no memory or storage wasted. Go to Stitcher.com/The War Room. That's one word. Stitcher.com/The War Room. Use the coupon code The War Room. It works you into a contest to win millions and millions of money. Now, let's jump into some football talk, gentlemen. Roger Goodell, also known as Dumbledore, has been very busy this week. There's a lot of fines going on. Colton, $400K. Pollard, Jackson, Merriweather, $42K apiece. You know,
yeah.
Golson, what's going
Jimmy
on?
He was actually suspended, but he appealed the suspension, and you know they reversed the suspension and just hit him with a $100,000 fine. He's a repeat offender, so you know they're looking at him for his hit. Matter of fact, it came 1 week after he hit Jeff Cumberland on the New York Jets, but the hit this week that got him suspended, that he ultimately appealed, was on Darren Sproles from the Saints. Golson, he's a headhunter, man. Bottom line, he's a headhunter. The new rules really don't, you know, they don't favor what he does and how he tackles and how he goes about the game. There's going to be a lot of fines this year. I mean, it's a lot of fines so far in two games, and it's a lot of fines this week. You said it's a shame, B. Austin?
Yeah.
I mean, they're trying to protect the players. I get that. And the thing is, when you watch how the games are officiated, just watching all around the league, it's obvious that it was a mandate that came down because the refs are not playing at all. They're, like, trying to eject cats. They just are not playing. And in terms of Dev, what you said with Golson, he's definitely one of those guys. He will be, like, you know, fined heavily. As soon as he comes on the field, all you hear when he comes on the field. Yeah, he's a headbanger, man.
But everybody on this list fits into that profile. Golson, Pollard, Jackson, and Merriweather are all headbusters. And I just think overall – they bring a lot of excitement to the game. And I understand, you know, no helmet to helmet. But some of the hits, they weren't going helmet to helmet. They were
using
the
you're right. The Pollard hit on Andre Johnson was actually shoulder to helmet. That was kind of questionable. Like,
it definitely was.
I'm with you on that one, B. Austin. Like, what do they want him to do?
Now, Merriweather.
No launching helmet to helmet. Merriweather's a headhunter.
Yeah, Merriweather's
he knocked
a dick.
Lacy out of the game. He knocked Lacy out of the game, and then later in the game, knocks himself out of the game, going to somebody else's game.
But so you know what, though? When you look at
talent,
he hit Lacy with the crown of his helmet. He didn't see the hit that he put on you. So I can understand that.
So do you think has anybody been to a Little League practice? Because I remember in Little League and even in high school, like some of the hitting drills, one-on-one, mano-a-mano that we had to do, did anybody remember that perpendicular drill where, like, one guy is going one way, then the other guy's coming the other way. One guy has the ball, and you just have to lay him out or throw.
Yeah,
like,
Of course.
Is that even allowed?
You know, I remember walking home from practice, and the more marks you had on your helmet, the better you felt about your practice.
Of course.
Yeah,
exactly.
Which probably, you know, wasn't even the way to do things back then. They just weren't teaching kids any better. You know what I'm saying? So now that they're changing all the rules in NFL and college, it's up to the people, it's up to these little league coaches to actually teach the game a little better. I mean, but that's difficult because a lot of these guys aren't getting paid. They're just like some cats from around the way who decide to take on the team. So you know, they're out there, they're fans, just like everybody else. They want to see little dudes laying other little dudes out. So, you know, you got to get some responsibility on that level. But I'm with B. Austin as far as some stuff being a shame. But the Merriweather type stuff, I don't feel sorry for that because
there's never really room for that. Merriweather is a known dick. Like that's he's a dickhead. He's out there for that.
All right.
Question: if we're not going high now, we're protecting the head. The target zone now is like below the waist and in some cases below the knee, and it's like that's gonna cause a ton of injuries as well. I actually heard someone say, well, rather the knee, God forbid, but rather the knee get shredded up than, you know, the brain get – and I hear that, but
– Yo, and be authentic.
No, actually, I heard it the other way around. I've heard players, even T.O., they asked T.O. The other day, and he said he actually rather somebody go for his head than his knee. Head injury,
I think,
you come right back.
I think we also was talking about more of the fan, more than what the fans say, not the actual players. And the thing is, to your point, B. Austin, I wonder where the game will be, you know, 20 years from now. Because I actually, this is like, you know, as long as I've lived, people love football. Everybody loves football. I mean, it's American like apple pie. But I actually hear parents now saying, "Yo, my kid can't play, or I'm not letting them play." It's amazing what's going on. So I know that it's not going to be right away, but long term, I wonder where the sport's going to be.
Jimmy,
I mean, boxing suffered with this for a while.
Jimmy, long as that doesn't happen in Florida, Texas, California, and Pennsylvania, we'll be all right.
Hey, about the Bernard Pollard hit that B. Austin was saying, he didn't even use his head. Like, he tweeted the next day, he had spoken to the NFL, and they said he did everything right. And then the next day, he still got slapped with the $42,000 fine. He didn't get called for a penalty on the play. He purposely on the play moved his head and hit him with his shoulder. But what they're calling that one was a hit to the helmet on a defenseless receiver. I'm like, is it a defenseless receiver or is it Andre Johnson? Does the name make a difference or is it really just defenseless?
Man, I ain't getting
so, you know, some of these hits are questionable, and then some of them you just say, what do you want these guys to do? You know what I mean?
What do you want them? Because then the other thing is receivers and running backs are ducking. They're changing because the target, what you're supposed to hit, isn't stationary.
Which in the ref's eyes makes them defenseless for some reason.
But
ducking is a defense, and you end up ducking yourself right into a mollywop sometimes. So that's what happened.
Yeah, man. Moving on, though. Let's talk about the Manning Bowl, which ended up becoming a dud. As always, it was hyped up, you know, and just didn't live up to that. What you guys think about the game?
Big brother 3-0 over the little brother, regular season game, kind of meaningless. Not so meaningless for the Giants because, you know, it does place them in a 0-2 hole, you know, and you know the statistics about teams that go 0-2, you know, about them not making the playoffs. Playing in the NFC East may negate that for the Giants. But like you said, Jimmy, I think the game was a dud. Just extremely overhyped.
They need to have like a top receiver and top cornerback like the brothers and like face off against each other. That'll be a you know.
Then they'll really be playing against each other.
It was a dud, and it was overhyped because of the names, and it's kind of. You lose sight of the fact that this is such a team sport because Eli's team is not good. That's not a knock to Eli to say Eli
is good. You still don't expect the Giants to go out there and just get blasted by anybody, even if they're going to lose the game.
Listen,
you still expect them to be a
it's
little
amazing.
More competitive.
The Giants team goes as their pass rush go. And,
yes.
I mean,
even
the Super Bowls they won. When their pass rush is on,
that's
they're
true.
A dangerous team. When they get no pressure just by rushing four, they're an average team at best. Or they're below average, as a matter of fact.
They'll still mess around and win the Super Bowl this year.
They
have all the same holes.
Better, their linebackers aren't much better than the War Room Sports starting five at linebacker.
They won the Super Bowl with all those holes. They just happened to have the pass rush, but now they have those holes without the pass rush.
Yeah.
But that's the point.
Even that season, the pass rush wasn't what it was supposed to be until the final stretch where they just put it together and went on that little run. You know, once they got the pass rush and a little bit of their running game back together, you know, then teams couldn't really stop them. So that's the thing. That's why I never
Brandon
count this team
back.
Out.
They brought Brandon Jacobs back, and he's still running sideways, being the tiptoeing bandit, trying to stretch plays to the edge.
Oh,
at least he's not dribbling the ball down the field, though.
Yeah, he is what he is, but he's holding on to the rock.
You look at week one and the turnovers
world,
they had. Those were some costly fumbles they had in week one when he was dribbling all around the court trying to show his handle. You can say what you want
to
say about Jacobs. And still had a chance to win. This is the Cowboys thing. Dev, you made the best point. Because they play in the NFC East, they can start off 0-4 and still win the division because that division is horrendous. Nobody wants to win that division. So
I picked the Giants to win the division beginning of the year. I picked the Giants to win the division, and the Cowboys not going to make the playoffs.
I picked the Cowboys to win. And nobody else made the playoffs.
I probably should have picked the Eagles, for real, because even though the Eagles lost that game and, you know, were brought back to life or back down to earth because everybody thought that they were the greatest show on turf, part two, they still were right in that game and could have won that game. Their defense was deplorable, but they could have won that game.
You know, the funny thing is I hear fans talking, fans of other teams, who are kind of glad that the Eagles took that L because Eagles fans did get out of hand after the Monday night win in Washington. You know, they started acting like Washington fans. Like, you know, they proved something because they beat the Skins on Monday night. But I hear people saying, like, Chip Kelly's offense was grounded, brought back down to earth. That's not really the case if you look at it. San Diego stayed on the field. The Eagles' defense could not get off the field on third downs. The Eagles' offense only had possession of the ball for 19 minutes, and they still scored 30 points in 19 minutes, and that's leaving three touchdowns on the field with Mike Vick missing DeSean Jackson like twice and then somebody else dropping a touchdown pass. So, you know, like, I don't really think his offense has been grounded. I'm not saying I'm a big believer in the sustainability of this offense, but I still think it's a little premature for people to say, people got film on them and it's over now. It wasn't really over. San Diego didn't do much to stop them. They scored 30 points in 19 minutes, and that's with a ton of mistakes where they could have scored more points. But the defense is horrendous, yo. What they showed the first half against Washington, that was already gone. So I think the real defense probably stood up against the Chargers.
Being a Jim Johnson disciple, man, and, like, watching what our defense is now, yo, it's hard to stomach. Like, I don't care about all the points we put up. Yo, we can't stop Little Sisters of the Poor. Like, Sandy, yo.
Yo, I was thinking San Diego's not even that good because fell from top 10 and not mentioned at all. He looked like a...
Look, guys, wait. Let's just wait until third down. We bust their ass on third down.
But y'all know what I said before the season, though. I think he's in line to maybe step back up. You know, he's had like two mediocre seasons by his account. You know, you still look at his numbers and everything. He still has better numbers than a lot of quarterbacks. But like Jimmy said, he was like top 10 at one point. Maybe he was top 5 or 6 in a lot of people's eyes.
Yeah.
And he definitely had two seasons that knocked him out of that. I don't know if he's going to get that far back up the ladder, but I saw before the season, I just thought he was going to have a better season. Now, after a couple of games, I'm not going to say, okay, it's back on and I'm correct. But he sure did the thing to the Eagles, and that might just be a product of their defense rather than Phillip Rivers being all the way back. But it was a little bit of both because, you know, you still got to go out there and execute even when the defense is allowing you to do it. But it was frustrating as a fan, you know, to watch every third down. You just knew they weren't going to get off the field. And you don't want the Eagles to get into shootouts like that because I think with this fast-paced offense, you know, these guys will score all day except for when they have to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the way I thought about it. Even though they went back down and tied the game up, they probably should have slowed it down a little bit once they got in the red zone.
Slow it
not
down.
Not for what everybody's saying, slow it down so you won't leave Phillip Rivers with a chance to go back down the field, because I don't think you can be that cocky. I think you have to score when you can score. I'm just thinking slow it down. You get inside the red zone, you know the game gets a little tighter. And he's still trying
amazing,
to run plays so fast. You know, Mike Vick got hurt. He could have called a timeout to keep him in the game. So that was kind of like a wasted down. So it was just some things.
It's amazing
done better.
Because, like, when you watch these games on Sunday, right, these coaches, like, and I guess that's part of being a coach. They outthink themselves so much. I was watching the Carolina game. Carolina had the ball, right? They're up by three. The ball was about 2 minutes left. And they're moving down the field. So then they start, like, kneeling on the ball to settle for a field goal because they're trying to run as much clock out as possible. I swore North Turner was coaching this team. They kick the field goal, go up six, just because they want to run as much clock out as possible. Buffalo comes right back downfield and wins the game by one. And my point in saying all that is these coaches, man, like, they it's like when the going gets tough, they get so conservative and forget what gets them there, man. Like, it's just amazing to watch these coaches make these mistakes. With that being said, looking at the NFC East and how the Eagles played that game and how their contemporaries played, they have a shot to win that division. Dallas wasn't impressive. The Redskins, I thought they would like at least start off fast after what happened in the Eagles game, and they started looking a lot better in the second half. Same thing all over again. Now, granted, they played the Packers and Aaron Rodgers, who's the best quarterback in football, but what do you think about the Redskins after week two, considering all the pressure they had on them and all the expectations?
What I'll say,
let
I
me
think,
start
you know,
off
they
by
might,
saying, okay,
you know, they
okay,
might start, Kirk, I would say they might start, they were talking about if RG3 has another bad week, then you're going to start hearing for Kirk Cousins' name to go out there. And in terms of Kansas City, I just want to throw that out there. Remember, I picked Andy Reid to be Coach of the Year and Alex
so
Smith to be comeback player of the year, and for the Chiefs to make the playoffs. Now, they can go 2-14, but it looks like they're off to a good start.
Now, Kill, I don't think RG3 will get benched, even if he has another mediocre game. I don't think he will. I don't think he should. I think it's silly talk for the, you know, for Kirk Cousins' name to even be coming up in this situation. They did groom Kirk Cousins in the instance that RG3 wasn't ready with the knee. But one thing I give to RG3 is that he's not using that as an excuse. He keeps saying the knee is not an issue. And I actually believe him. I just think that people are so caught up on the rookie of the year, RG3, that they just can't believe that it's possible for him to have a mediocre stretch in the NFL. I think the offense has changed, and I just think they're doing more mature things offensively that they did not do last year, and we're just starting to see what a few of his weaknesses might be that he can work on, probably will work on, and end up, you know, conquering those things. But, you know, they're trying to throw more medium range timing routes down the field, and we're starting to see that his accuracy isn't, you know, what we thought it was just by the numbers last year, because they were throwing a lot of stuff, you know, to the line of scrimmage. Of course you're going to have a high completion percentage. Of course you're not going to throw a lot of interceptions because you're throwing a lot of short passes, you're lulling the defense to sleep, and you're going way down the field.
Play action.
You know, go routes and play action. So I just think they're mixing it up. They're moving on. They're not doing a lot of read option. Now, that's something they're talking about bringing back a little bit, because he's saying that the knee isn't an issue, and if he has to run to give this team a spark, he will do that. But I don't think it has anything to do with his knee. I mean, it could have a little bit to do with his confidence in his knee, because everybody, you know, like Ron Jaworski's talking about his mechanics and everything. But
he's not
that
planting.
Was the,
he's not
but
planting
that was
on
the
his right foot.
Kill that. I still look at that as excuses because that was the allure of RG3. What was some of the stuff they were raving over last year? Oh my God! Did you see how he threw that on a rope off of his back foot? He wasn't planting last year either. He was running around throwing the ball, not planting, and making amazing plays. And now that he had 2 weeks, everybody's ready to, you know, jump the shark just like they were when he was doing good stuff. Everybody wanted to anoint him so fast. And what did we say? As quickly as they build you up, they tear you down. So it's just people.
If you want to call
hey,
a good
McNabb is probably feeling great right now.
RG3 will be fine. I think he'll be fine, man. He just is not the god that everybody wants him to be. But he'll be fine.
Here's the reality in this. I think that you look at a rookie quarterback developing quite a bit between his first and his second season. And when RG3 spends the majority of the offseason rehabbing like mad, granted, he is putting a lot of work in on the rehab, he's not putting work in on developing his game going into that second season. So there's a strong possibility that he hasn't developed or continued to develop his acumen as a passer and as a second-year professional quarterback in the NFL. I think that's a part of what it is. The second thing being, if you're down by 20, 21, 24, 26 points in the first half, there's probably 30. Not a lot of designed runs. And even the read option is still basically to get you runs. You don't want to run the ball. You need big chunks of yardage. So now RG3 is put in a position where he has to pass, and it has to be intermediate routes. It has to be long routes to pick up the yardage that they need when they're sitting in second and long and third and long, and they're basically losing the game and they have to come back. So I don't think you're seeing him run as a function of circumstance, really.
Yeah, that's, I mean, he's had 9 designed runs over 2 games. I still think that's, you know, a lot for a quarterback.
That's a lot. That's a lot for a normal quarterback, but for a running quarterback in the read option, and we know how much read option they ran last year, that's not what they're used to seeing from him.
I mean, what's hurting the Redskins right now? It's a combination of both. The defense is horrendous, just like we said about the Eagles' defense, but it's not the defense alone. A lot of people are looking at the numbers that the offense and RG3 ends up putting up at the end of the game, and they're looking at that as a positive, not realizing that all of those numbers are basically garbage time numbers. Every quarterback turns into Joe Montana when they're down 24, 20, 28 points. Come on, we've all watched football for years. It's just the way things are. Defenses get softer. They're just trying to keep everything in front of them, and the quarterback is throwing the ball on every single play. Guys are running wide open, finding holes and zones, and they're making it look easy to the point where fans are like, well, why couldn't we do this in the first half? You can do this in the first half because this is not their base defense. This is not the looks they were giving you in the first half. But, you know, so with them, it's a mixture of the defense being terrible, but at the same time, the offense is something like 5-for-21 on third downs. So just like we said, the Eagles' defense couldn't get off the field against the San Diego Chargers, the Redskins' offense can't stay on the field on third down. So the defense goes down, sits down, has a 2-minute conversation, and they're right back on the field. So you still, like, if you want to get your defense going, because they have to be a little better than what they're showing now, because they're getting pressure on the quarterback. Their secondary is just woeful. But you have to help the defense out. You can't go 3-and-out, you know, all the time, and then after the game want to throw all the blame on the defense. And I'm not saying they're doing that, because they're not. But they need to help each other, man. Both units need to help each other.
Just briefly before we move on, I think you said something, you know, that I really agreed with when we did Field Vision, which you can always find at warroomsportstv.com, by the way. When we were doing Field Vision with the Sports Kings, and we were talking about RG3, you said it's kind of like he's taking a step backwards to move forward. And I think that could be the case. Long term, I think he'll be okay. But you have to kind of take this step backwards to allow him to develop as a quarterback, to try these throws, move it down the field. But because you're not going to really go any further running a Friday Night Lights offense. I mean, he had 800 and like some odd rushing yards last year. I mean, he put up enough, you know, I mean, he's like damn near a running back. Like, you know, so now he's getting an opportunity to make some of what you call the big boy throws. And get a chance to see what kind of how defenses will defend him when he makes these plays. So long term, he'll be okay. But as a complete team, they're not good. Let's just keep
they're
it in mind. They overachieved last year. They overachieved last year just making the playoffs. The team overall just isn't good. You know, so long term he'll be okay.
No, and that's a good point. You know, fans don't want to hear that because they just automatically looked at that seven-game finish last year as an indication that the Redskins are about to dominate this division for years to come. And they really didn't do much over the offseason to improve. And that's another thing that's not really on them. They couldn't. They were strapped as far as money, free agency-wise, because of the penalties that was levied against them and the Cowboys. I mean, of course, yeah, it is their fault with the picks because they exhausted them all in Robert Griffin III, but he's your franchise quarterback. He was the rookie of the year last year, so those picks, as far as the franchise goes, they're already forgotten about. Like, we already got, you know, what we wanted out of those picks. So they really couldn't improve that much through the draft. I think they did well for the picks that they did have. They couldn't improve through free agency because they didn't have any dough. They actually had to restructure contracts for some of the people that are already on the team to keep them on the team. D'Angelo Hall's bum ass had to take a pay cut to stay in Washington. So that's the thing that I was trying to, you know, the conversations I was having with their fans prior to the season. Like, why do you guys think that, you know, it's going to be such a great year? You couldn't even improve. The offensive line is not deep at all. If somebody gets hurt there, they're in trouble. The secondary, like we already said, is woeful. So I just, you know, I know you get that hometown optimism, but I just didn't really see what people saw to go ahead and anoint this team as ready to take next step into dominating the division.
Not a good team. Not a good team, as you said. It's not a good team.
And for everybody who's listening right now and are wondering, oh, what are they worried about my team? This is what we do for a living. Like, I'm so tired of hearing that question. And we're not homers by any stretch because –
That's the dumbest thing ever. Why do you even care? Like, why do you even care about my team? I can't believe people say that, man.
First of all, I get paid to care about your team. Secondly, like, I mean, it's not like we're doing this and we're saying homer stuff. 5 minutes ago, we were just telling you how bad our home team is. So, yeah, please stop saying that to me. And y'all know who y'all are. But
we got a call along, Devin.
That's their story.
Calling all the way from Compton, California, man. We got calls from all over the country this evening.
Compton in the house.
Yeah. Calm.
Let's go to Rob in Compton. Rob,
what's up,
you there? You in Compton or you in Carson?
I'm on the border, dog.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. My geography not like that, so it's not like I know
anything. Not out there, it ain't. I ain't even going to claim to know that, man.
What's going on with you, though?
I was good, man. I just ready for the game tonight. I'm tired of seeing Andy Reid fans, man. If you like the Chiefs, if you're a Philly fan, then go to the Chiefs, man. We don't want you, man.
You know what watching this broadcast, Rob, they keep showing there's actually a Chiefs bar in Philly. You know, and that's not abnormal, because everywhere I go for Eagles road games, there's usually an Eagles bar somewhere. But it does seem kind of random to have a Chiefs bar somewhere in the city of Philadelphia. But I think that bar is getting way too much play on this broadcast tonight. I've seen that bar tonight, you know, more times than ever before in my life. Like,
but you know what?
Eagles home game or what?
That bar has been there for years. I remember about 15 years ago. It's called Charlie's. Because I went in that joint and I almost puked on myself.
Being a Broncos fan. Jimmy, it's definitely the most popular non-Eagles bar in the city. But tonight, now that they're playing them and Andy's back and everything, yo, they've shown that bar on this broadcast a little too
man,
much.
That's also because in terms of the broadcast, they do way too much, man. In terms of like the NFL Network and ESPN, they do way too much. I mean, they milk it for what they can do, man. And on Sunday, the pregame show starts at 7 a.m. Why are you
and
talking at 7 a.m? Way
too much. Mooch's suit is doing too much when they zoom in on it. It's doing way too much. So go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, what's up, Rob?
I just want to hit on like a couple things Eagles related. First of all, I want to thank the Philly fans in Philadelphia. Don't use your swag, man. Don't use your flavor, because first of all, cheese bar, that's not cool. And second of all, the Philly fans, McNabb owes a lot to the Philadelphia fans for humbling him when he came to Philadelphia. Because if it wasn't for that humble, for him being humble, he would never accomplish a lot what he did. I know we will go on and we'll talk about how he smiled too much and how, he was very, like, did he throw up? For people who were watching the Super Bowl, he was getting run down the whole game. So of course, you're going to throw up if your offensive line getting depleted. 8 through 3 interceptions. Then he got sacked 8 times. But, yeah, I want to thank the Philly fans for that.
I thought they blocked pretty well in the Super Bowl.
Getting up 3 sacks and 3 interceptions to the Patriots? No.
Well, the interceptions, that was
he threw the interceptions, not the offensive line.
Yeah, that was 5. That was 5 on that dumb nonsense.
But
that's neither here nor there, man. That's neither here nor there, man.
I mean,
he's
back tonight at halftime. He's getting his jersey retired, man. You know, it's well documented over the years how, we feel about McNabb in here. But at the same time, like, I don't disagree with it. You know, they're retiring his jersey. He was the quarterback. He had, like, the longest run of any quarterback here. He had the most successful run of any quarterback here. So, I don't mind him retiring his jersey. Frankly, I don't want to see the number out on the field anyway. Bad memories, but so it's cool for me. So no, but on the real, congratulations to him. I hope and I know they will, because there's still a lot of diehard Donovan McNabb fanatics in Philadelphia who still, apologize for him to this day. I think he's going to get a rousing applause from the crowd. I think Andy will probably get a good applause before the game, maybe a little bit of mixed. Because I don't see why you would boo him. I mean, y'all the ones got him fired in the first place, so mission accomplished. There's no reason to boo him now until the game starts. Then everybody in red is an enemy. So, I just hope it's a good night for that kind of stuff, but I just hope the Eagles that are on the field go out there and do what they're supposed to do and not get caught up in hype that really doesn't concern them. Nobody on this team was really around for all of the success that they're going to celebrate tonight between McNabb and Andy Reid. So you go out there and do what you got to do, because this really doesn't happen. You know what I wonder?
McNabb has all the records, and McNabb may be one of the greatest Eagles quarterbacks of all time. So yeah, it is well deserved, regardless of how we feel about it. Yeah.
They ain't hard to be in here, but
I wonder. What I wonder is how McNabb is going to feel when he's standing there watching his number go up and he's thinking, damn, Peyton Manning is still playing. Damn, Tom Brady is still playing.
No.
Damn, Drew Brees is still playing.
I don't think he's going to be thinking about that big,
yeah, man. You know what? He's still going to look at his bank statement and say, I'm still rich. So he good, man.
He might look at Michael Vick and say, damn, why did I lobby
Vick
to happen, man?
He lobbied
for the guy to take his job.
I don't want to switch it up real quick, but talk about the Eagles right now. I can understand why B. Austin. I agree with B. Austin a lot when he talk about the Eagles being mediocre in the offense. And the reason why I agree with that is because we have to understand that Michael Vick in the last 3 years, this is the first time he actually played. Actually learned how to play in a pro style, just an offense in general. Remember, he came in as a one-trick pony.
Yeah, no doubt. I think Mike Vick, though I like him as a person, I think his career has been grossly overrated by many out there. I think he's playing very well right now, and I hope he can keep it up. I hope he can stay healthy. You know what I'm saying? What? So at least, you know, in his twilight years of his career, he can have a little more success, you know, as a passer than he's had, you know, and maybe try to salvage something decent. I mean, something legitimate, not just the stuff that people say that want to apologize for.
But do you think he needs to run more?
Nah, he needs to throw the ball. You see, every time he run, he get up limping. So, no, he don't need to run at all unless he has to. He needs to run. He needs to scramble. He doesn't need to run. There's a difference. Like, he needs to scramble. If everything breaks down and you see a hole and we need a first down or something, then you get on your horse. But Mike Vick hasn't mastered the art of sliding. He's still diving headfirst into linebackers. So, no, he doesn't need to run unless you don't want to see him for the rest of the season. Then, you know, go ahead. But, Rob, we only got a couple minutes left, man. So we're going to let you go. We'll be right to you next week, all right? Watch that game, man. Bring good luck to them boys tonight.
I hope so. Now, one more question. Are you guys would you guys think that we should switch to a 4-3? Because we got like six studs on defensive line.
Yeah, I'm always about the 4-3. I don't believe in the 3-4. I hate the 3-4.
I like the 4-3, but I think a lot of people are switching to the 3-4 because of the new offenses that are taking over the league, this whole read option stuff. So I think once that offense basically dies, the Wildcat death, then I think a lot of teams might be switching back. But for now, you have to keep the personnel out there that can combat what some of these teams are trying to do. So
what you're saying, is have an extra linebacker out there with the mobility to stay with that read option. I get that. Yeah. I just hate that 3-4. I hate that defense.
Nah, anyway, Rob, thanks for the call, homie.
All right, much love. Y'all take care. Keep spreading the word out.
You already know, man. Thanks a lot, homie. Yo, we talked enough about that. Here's what I want to ask you guys about. Because there was a very important game in the NFL last week, which was hyped. And we know it was week two, but so what? The best game of week two, which was supposed to be that Niners and Seahawks game, which was one-sided. I mean, what did you guys think about that game, and what do you think about those two teams moving forward in that division?
First of all, you know, the game was tainted by the whole lightning delay because I ain't going to front like I saw the end of it. But I don't know. I think because I actually picked the 49ers in that game, I think myself and a lot of other people underestimated the effects of home field advantage for the Seattle Seahawks, man. Like, I haven't been to that stadium yet, but I look forward to going because, by all accounts, the place is a madhouse and the decibel level is crazy. And they say it really affects other teams. So I think I'm going to pretty much stop picking against them at home, no matter who they're playing against, because the whole 12 man thing. I'm starting to think it's real.
See, that's real.
So,
you know it's real.
So I don't know if anybody. You know, San Francisco better work on home field for the playoffs so they won't have to go back into that place.
Yeah, I actually picked Seattle in that game. I picked Seattle in the division. In fact, I picked Seattle to go to the bowl. But I didn't think they would look that dominant against them, even though they were at home. But it was good to see them get the running game going.
I think I picked the Niners to win that game, and obviously I was wrong. I still think the Niners are the better team to a man, but as was mentioned, the 12th man.
About to a woman.
I don't know how many women on that squad, but do their cheerleaders look better? I definitely think that the Niners are still a better team, but yeah, on any given Sunday, and that was the day.
Yeah, because Russell Wilson is not particularly playing great at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe, I mean, you know, that might be more of a reason for me to start buying into the Seattle hype, because I haven't yet. I'm going to be honest with y'all.
Yeah.
Before the season, I hadn't. I was on the brink of not even putting them in the playoffs in my picks, thinking that, you know, it might have been another spur of the moment, prisoner of the moment type thing with them, and everybody's just on the Super Bowl bandwagon now. But when you do stuff like that, when you beat the dominant team in your conference kind of easily, kind of handily, and your quarterback, who was getting all the rave last year, isn't even particularly playing that great, your overall team might be a little something to reckon with.
He's making his throws when he has to, but he's not playing well at all. But it's funny because it's like the two wins they have have both impressed me because they should have lost the first game. So they won a game they should have lost. They won a game they should have lost when they probably were looking past Carolina because San Fran was weak too. Mm. And they won the game anyway. So that impressed me. And then the way they handled the Niners impressed me. And it's funny because I watched Russell Wilson play, and he's not playing particularly well like he did last year.
They're also like the
Redskins. They're allowing him to make more big boy throws. Not that he wasn't at all last year, but they're giving him more opportunity to do that. And it's funny because every time I watch him play, I think about the draft when he was drafted. And I remember Mel Kiper saying when he got drafted that if Russell Wilson was a little bit taller, he probably would go ahead of Andrew Luck. And I was like, man, get the hell out of here.
And,
you know, now he's balling. Yeah, but Mel Kiper said that during the draft. He said that during the draft. He said if this guy was just a little bit taller, he would be up there with RG3 Andrew Luck and possibly ahead of him. But the one knock is his height. But with that being said, man, they definitely impressed me. Dev is right. That 12th man is ballistic. You can, like, feel it at home when you're watching, Pauls.
I can't wait to get to that stadium, man. I've been there and passed it, but it wasn't football season. I can't wait to get to that stadium, man. I'm taking earplugs or whatever I have to do because I hear it's real. Like, didn't they set a Guinness Book record during that game? They said not the earthquake. That was with the they registered on the Richter scale in that playoff game. But this past weekend, it was the highest decibel level of any sporting event ever. It overtook some soccer match over in Europe or something like that. So,
and then they had Sean Alexander out there. Sean Alexander out there getting them hype.
And you know what I heard from – what I hear about them, you know how at a normal stadium – teams that get hype at times they're supposed to get hype. I mean, fans, like, on a third down and their defense is out there. They say the noise at this place is damn near a constant. Of course, it gets louder at those particular moments, but they're always just yelling. Like, I don't know what's wrong with people in Seattle. I think the rain just make you yell. You just be yelling the whole time instead of just, like,
that's
on third down or, you know, a big down or something. All right, so who y'all got in this game tonight, man?
Yeah, I was about to ask you guys. 30
seconds. I'm gonna go with the Eagles on this one, just for the fact that I said I think the players on the field for the Eagles have nothing to do with all this crap that's going on. I think it's a little more pressure on the players from Kansas City because they were already in the news talking like we want to win this one for Andy so bad. So that's on their mind. I think if the Eagles can just relax and the defense can play a little bit of defense, I think they can go ahead and pull this one out. So I'm gonna pick the Eagles. But, you know, I've always been an Andy fan, man. So, you know, kudos to Andy.
I'm going to go with the Chiefs. It's funny because I flip-flop on this game. You know what I mean? No John Kerry, no B. Austin. But I flip-flopped on this game. And I'm going with the Chiefs, though, and just because I think that Andy Reid is probably one of the best coaches in the last decade. And, of course, he never got the championship ring. But he's an excellent coach, and that team in Kansas City wasn't bad. They got exactly what they needed, a game manager and a new coach. So I'm actually picking the Chiefs.
Yeah.
It wouldn't shock me if the Eagles won, but I'm just hoping for a great game. I do not want to see a blowout or a boring game.
Yeah, well, as a fan, I only want to see a blowout on one side of the ball.
I know that's right.
Be awesome real quick. Take us out.
I am hoping for a Philadelphia Eagles blowout. However, I am picking the Kansas City Chiefs because Andy Reid understands and knows his monkey. So he's prepared.
Yo.
Wow. With that being said, I have nothing else to say, but thanks for joining us again in the War Room, good people. Shout out to those in the chat room, those who hit us up on Facebook and Twitter on the show, the callers who we got to. I mean, shout out to you, those that we didn't get to. We apologize. We'll get to you next week. Special thanks to Fred Perdue, as usual, for giving us his college football games of the week. Don't forget, tune in next week, same time, same place, for more talk. We're going to, you know, football season's upon us, so what else are we going to talk about but the NFL and whatever athlete gets in trouble with the law this next week? So, until then, enjoy your weekend. Enjoy your week. We'll see you right back here. Check us out, Facebook and Twitter at War Room Sports. And always check our videos out, warroomsportstv.com. Until next time, everybody, don't accept mediocrity and be steadfast in the war against ignorance. We'll see you chumps on top.
All the blueprint.
Yo.
Every Thursday, 6 to 8, they do this. Shout out to Dev, PJ, Be Austin, Doc Bay on replay. WarRoomSports.com. Get that mobile app. If not, dial.
Call it
323-0012. If you're going and you sensitive, then oh well.
Yeah.
Physical podcast, let's talk sports. Showtime like magic in the block push. Listen live, push one to join in. Rip your team or listen for your enjoyment. Hip-hop dollars, pit stop and knowledge. Should be in sports credits, I ain't talking college. Five guys, no beef though. Corporate secrets, but the streets know. Belafonte, I got a G-flow. KC, royalty, I'm in beast mode. 2 hours, get your game up. Who's the best in sports cast? You better name us. War Room Sports.
War Room Sports, www.warroomsports.com. What? Ain't no more to it.